Welcome, everyone. Whether you're here with us in person or online throughout the world, thank you so much for joining us for Spirit, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Senior Director of the OU's Department of Community Projects and Partnerships, and coordinator and host for Spirit. The OU started Spirit several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as you typically as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents, and seniors, everyone who's looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Periodically, like today, we are able to host what we call a hybrid program, both zooming out internationally as well as in person in various venues. Today, we are so happy and appreciative to presenting this program in person at Lower Marion Synagogue in Bala Cynwyd, Pennsylvania. We are so appreciative to Rabbi and Rebbetzin Schmidman, Svi Board, the board and membership of Lower Marion Synagogue, and especially to Joan Betish, who coordinates the senior programming for the shul. We are so thankful for you to host us today and for making all the arrangements for the Spirit program. Today's program is called Personalized Medicine, The Future of Medicine is Here. It will be presented by Hannah Hirschkop, who's a pharmacist, and her complete bio is on the Spirit website and in all the emails and materials that you read on the program. I don't want to take any more time away, but it is my pleasure and honor to turn the Spirit Forum over to Hannah Hirschkop. Let me suggest that if there will be time for questions afterwards, we'll be taking them both in the room and through the chat. For anybody who is on the chat, I suggest that you don't chat it to Hannah, chat it to me, because it'll be harder for her to read it. So that's it. It is my pleasure to turn the Spirit Forum over to Hannah. Thank you, everyone, both in person and online, for joining us today.
Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. I want to start by thanking Rebbetzin Judy Steinig, the OU Spirit, Rabbi N. Rebbetzin Schmidman, Joan Betish, LMS, the person who set up all the technology this morning, and all the attendees, both virtually and in person. Thank you so much. I hope there's something here for everyone to learn from this presentation. And I want to thank you all for the opportunity to share pharmacogenomics with this community. Please note, all the information presented here is for information purposes only. Please don't make any changes to your medication regimen without first consulting with your healthcare provider. Okay, let's begin. Okay, so let's see, a show of hands. Who has ever heard of pharmacogenomics? Usually when I ask the question, people usually say, pharma what? What did you say? Pharmacogenomics, and I did see some hands go up. This is wonderful. Okay, beautiful. Excellent. I don't know how many people raised their hands in the chat, but I hope there were a few. Okay, so first we'll start a little bit about me. I'm a clinical pharmacist. I went to pharmacy school at Long Island University in Brooklyn, New York. And I worked as a consultant pharmacist, and I still continue to work as a consultant pharmacist in nursing homes and assisted living facilities since I graduated in 2005. And I worked initially in New York, and then since moving here with my family 9 years ago, I've been working in the Philadelphia and New Jersey nursing homes. So I have a passion for caring for seniors and supporting them and their caregivers. I was always close with my great-grandparents, even when I was very young, and now with my Kananahara, 93-year-old grandmother who lives in Toronto. So how did I come to this pharmacogenomic journey? So 2 years ago, I was looking how to better serve my patients. And I heard about pharmacogenomics, and I heard about pharmacists using it in clinical practice, and my interest was really piqued. So a short while later, I was talking to a friend of mine in a different state, And, you know, she told me she was recently discharged from a mental health facility. And she said while she was there, her at the facility, she said her medications were switched and she feels so much better now. And then when she mentioned that to her father says, well, your mother's been taking that for 20 years. Wow. And that's what really sealed the deal that I'm going to focus on pharmacogenomics as opposed to other possible avenues. And there's a genetic component for how medications work for us. And I was on a mission to learn more about it and apply it to my work as a pharmacist. And here we are today. Okay. Okay, so imagine, I'll close your eyes for a moment, and imagine a world where every person would know what medication would actually work for you. Imagine being told you go into the doctor's office and the doctor says, oh, I've got a list. I'm going to refer to that. I know you have this and this condition. I'm going to go see what medication on your personal list is going to work for you. And I also can refer to that list and see what is not going to work for you, what medications I'm going to avoid. And imagine that all that information is readily available by just doing a simple cheek swab and all that information is generated. It's so easy. No blood tests, no pricks. Well, ladies and gentlemen, no imagination is needed. It's called pharmacogenomics. That science is here. And for short, we call it PGX. So it's hard to say pharmacogenomics, but if you say PGX, that's just as good. The science is about 20 years old in the 90s when they were doing gene sequencing. And then when the Human Genomic Project was completed in the 2000s, they were able to really research and study which genes code for the enzymes that affect how medications are broken down in their body. So in one's body. So the uptake of pharmacogenomics in clinical practice is slow and steady as more practitioners learn about this. Because really in medical school these days, I don't even know if they cover it. Pharmacy schools are just introducing it. We have a doctor on Drexel's staff, and I think PGX is not yet covered in Drexel Medical School. I was actually talking a couple of weeks ago with a student at Temple University. She's in pharmacy school, and she said that there's a mandatory pharmacogenomic class in second year. And I was so excited to hear that because when I went to pharmacy school, pharmacogenomics wasn't even mentioned. It wasn't even a word. So when people ask me, like, I mentioned it to my doctor and the doctor said, don't even go there. I think to myself, well, when did the doctor graduate? Does the doctor even know about pharmacogenomics? You know, it's an opportunity to educate that physician because that information can be so valuable for that physician as well, or provider, as well as all of their patients. And as we're going to see soon, there are guidelines to how pharmacogenomics is used and implemented. Okay, so I want to introduce you to Miss AR. Okay, so you see, Miss AR is a typical patient. She sees multiple physicians. She gets her medications from multiple pharmacies. So who's looking at her at the big picture of all her conditions, of all her medications? Who's ensuring that all the medications she takes from, that she's are being prescribed from different sources, they're all appropriate, that she's being adherent, that they're actually working, that they're safe for her? So that's where the pharmacist comes in, the clinical pharmacist. So Miss AR was taking a lot of medication, and a nurse advocate reached out to me. Her family had contacted the nurse advocate, and she contacted me and said, she's on a lot of medications. She is living in an assisted living, and she's taking many medications, including a few antidepressants, an anti-anxiety medication, an antipsychotic, a total of 13 medications a day. Now, to me, that sounds a lot, but I have to say, I see this every single day. 13 for some patients is a few. I've seen people on 20 plus medications that they have to ingest every single day, multiple times a day. Now, for some people, maybe that's necessary, for sure. But it's always good to have another set of eyes look at one's medication regimen and see, is it all necessary? Okay, I'm just going to take a drink. I'm sorry. Do you have a little cold? Okay. And the other thing the nurse advocate asked me was, are all the medications that she's taking, not only are they necessary, but are they compatible with her genes? Okay, so what is pharmacogenomics? What is PGx? So PGx pharmacogenomics is a study of how a person's DNA or genetics affects their personal response to medication. So genetic variation plays a major role in how individuals respond to different medications. Like if I were to give the same medication to every person in this room, chances are everyone's going to react a little bit differently. For some people, it may not work at all. Some people, it may work great. For some people, they may have a lot of side effects. So depending on the medication, genetic factors are estimated to account for between 20 and 95% of variability observed in how medication works for a person. Now, there's evolving evidence on more genes and more medications, a lot of research being done in this area. So one beautiful thing about pharmacogenomics is that it's a test that only has to be done once in one's lifetime because our genes are not changing. We have the same genes that we were born with, the same genetic material. So even though there is more evidence coming out, but the really good pharmacogenomic labs actually update someone's profile with a new and emerging evidence. So that way you don't have to go get another test done. And it's just interesting to note that over 99% of people have variants on at least one gene that affects drug metabolism and how drugs are broken down in the body. So, and when I say variation, and when I say like gene variation, I just want people to know that no matter what the results are, it's not a disease. You don't have a problem. It's just how we can adjust the medications for you, how we can tailor make your whatever your medication needs to you. It's really individualized. It's really, really personalized. Again, it's the tests, the genes that the pharmacogenomic labs look at are the genes not that determine disease risk. And they don't even look at the genes that determine eye color. These labs focus on the genes. They study the genes and they report on the genes that affect how medication work in our body. I'm not sure if I saw someone's hand go up. Okay. Okay. So who can benefit from a pharmacogenomic test? So I want everyone to ask themselves these questions, whether they're asking it for themselves or for a loved one. A lot of people here may be taking care of someone or have a relative who's taking care of someone else that may not be able to advocate for themselves or may not even be here today. Okay. So, you know, do you or someone you love, are you taking medications and possibly experiencing a lot of side effects? Or I take that medication and I'm just not feeling me. Okay. Or do you feel I'm taking medication and I don't feel it's working for me. Whatever it is I'm taking it for, that condition is persisting. It's not helping me. Some people are like, I am just taking so many medications, like, you know, Miss AR, over 13 medications. And on top of those, she also had some as needed medications on her list. So potentially even more than 13. Or some people are like, hey, my medications are working. I just want to know, is it the best ones I can take? Is it really compatible with my genetic makeup? And the areas of pharmacogenomic application are really quite wide and extensive. Pharmacogenomics cover medications in mental health, in seizures, pain management, cardiology, oncology, cancer, gastroenterology, stomach issues, infectious diseases, and others. And the more extensive tests that one can get done, the better. We'll talk about labs soon, but no, not all labs are equal. So a lab that covers, that tests on more genes, potentially the better the results could be. Okay, so who's who is pharmacogenomics for? So I say for everyone. And what do I mean by that? So myself, I'm very blessed. I don't take any medications. And I actually got the test done myself. And why is that? Because at some point in my life, I may end up needing medication. So instead of me having an issue arising and the doctor is going to want to prescribe, and I'll say, oh, 1 minute, I heard about this amazing test called pharmacogenomics. That whole process takes a minimum of 3 weeks till you get the swab and you do it and you mail it back and the report is ready. That's a minimum of 3 weeks. So instead of waiting for all that, I have it done. It's done. I have access to it online. And I actually sent my results to all of my doctors. And every time I go to a doctor, I say, remember, I got pharmacogenomic test done. You know, please look at it if you're thinking about prescribing. And it actually came back with some really interesting results. So I'll give you an example for myself. I'll just, you know, mention some classes of medication that if were ever prescribed or I would ever need, I couldn't take those specific ones. I would have to find alternatives. For example, I can't take any tricyclic antidepressants. Codeine or tramadol wouldn't work for me. If I were to take Motrin, I would have to take it very small dose, very, very, very cautious with that, as well as lorazepam. If I would have to take Ativan, I would have to take a very small dose. My personal results, I'm an intermediate in metabolizer for, I'll just say some scientific terms, cytochrome P50, the enzyme 2B6, 2C9. I'm a poor metabolizer of cytochrome P450, 2D6. And it was really eye-opening for me. So again, I have them. If I would ever to be on a medication, you know, I'm ready to roll. Okay. And then the second type of pharmacogenomic testing is for someone like Ms. AR, who we just saw on the screen. She's already on medication and they want to know if it's compatible with her genes. So that's also very, very appropriate. You know, I meet people all the time and, you know, when they hear I'm a pharmacist, all of a sudden I hear all their medication stories, you know, from the time of the time we were born. You have to hear what happened with this one and that medication. And well, hey, you know, pharmacogenomics. Or for example, if someone's doctor is considering putting them on a certain medication, and instead of going, we'll talk about the trial and error, like, instead of saying, oh, let's try this medication. If it doesn't work, let's try another one. Pharmacogenomic test, you have the results. You don't have to play with that. Is it going to work? Is it not going to work? Let's wait. You know, it involves a lot of things like time and money, people having to pay for a medication and take a few tablets and may not even work. And they wasted, you know, that whole fill. And then they have to go back to the doctor and they have to go back to the pharmacy for a new prescription and all that. So pharmacogenomics really avoids all that. And not just for you and I here, but really it's an issue for our country and the entire world. In the US, the statistic is a couple of years old, so I believe it's even more. About 275,000 lives are lost every year and hundreds of billions of dollars are wasted on suboptimal medication use. And that includes a lot of things, people who aren't taking their medication, people who got side effects from it and are now in the hospital because they need treatment. It includes so many different things. But if the basic is that the medications have to be used correctly, the right one for the right person, in order to avoid things like, you know, ER visits, like all that, you know, 520 billion, all that comes from, you know, unnecessary emergency room visits. And then sometimes it's so severe, the person has to be hospitalized or they have to pay an extra visit to the doctor because they're not feeling well. For some people, it may result in a nursing home admission. For some people, you know, they can't work. They lost days of work because something is medication related. So we have this PGX test. It really It really does save so much. Okay. And as I alluded to, it avoids trial and error, you know, with prescribing, as well as avoidable harm due to medication. And I'll just give you, I'll paint a scenario. So we know there's a mental health crisis in our country, and only got worse with COVID. Literally millions of people are suffering with depression and anxiety. And when someone goes to the doctor, what usually happens with one of those conditions, as well as many others, what usually happens is the doctor will try one medication and they'll say, come back in 6 weeks, you know, go get a fill, come back in 6 weeks, let me know how you feel. And then, well, it may work, it may not work, it may give them the side effects, you know. And actually with antidepressants, the statistics are about like, the first antidepressant is effective in about 30% of people. So that 70% of millions, we're talking about millions of people, are still suffering. So their depression may not be resolved. And then, so they go back to the doctors. Again, that's like 6 weeks, I don't want to say wasted, but past, person still suffering. Come back to the doctor. Doctor says, we're going to try another one. Well, the doctor may increase the dose or, you know, again, play around like that. And then, or you may prescribe a new medication and then come back to me in another, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. And every time there's a change has to happen, it's again, several weeks of waiting to see if the medication is working. And then possible the medication has to be changed. Maybe we have to add another medication. So we're talking about potentially months until a person gets resolution or relief from something that can impact their life. So that's one of the things PGX avoids, is that trial and error, and sometimes, you know, extreme harm. I mean, for example, there's a medication, Plavix, and in order for it to work, enzyme has to break it down. But some people don't have that or don't have a lot of that enzyme to break, you know, to make Plavix work. So if someone is taking Plavix and it's not working in their body, they potentially could be at risk of having a heart attack. Or for someone, it could be a second heart attack if they only started taking after their first heart attack. But it really, but knowing that information in advance could, you know, the doctor say, oh, Plavix isn't going to work for you. I'm not even going to put it on you. I'm not even going to prescribe it for you. Sorry. Yes. So, okay. And then there are other cancer medications that, you know, again, a PGX test can see if the person has an enzyme, can make the enzyme in their body that can break it down. And if not, this cancer medication causes a lot of harm and can make someone, you know, potentially very sick, even sicker than the cancer. Okay. And on the next slide, I just highlighted, so there are hundreds of medications that have a gene drug relationship. So I just highlighted a few on the screen. Some of them you'll recognize. And, you know, and I had alluded to different areas like mental health conditions, you know, cardiology, pain management, cancer. So these are just some examples of which, so the top line is the name of the enzyme. And when I say the name of the enzyme, so basically our genes code for our body to make that enzyme, okay? So if the body says make a lot, you'll have a lot. If your body says make a little, you know, then you'll have a little bit of that enzyme to break down these medications. And that really affects how the medication works. And okay. And just to note, you know, people say, oh, I've never heard of it. Is it like a real science? So it really is. There are several different resources that someone can use. For example, we'll start with our own FDA, and there's a website there. And I just took a snapshot from the FDA's website of different names of different medication and the gene that codes for that enzyme. And then if the test comes back and a person is, for example, like a poor metabolizer, then there's an action that has to be taken, an adjustment has to be made to the medication. Of course, that's where, you know, you work with your healthcare provider. But it's real and it's important to reference this, but you only know what your statuses of how you break down the medication if you've had to test. Here are some other resources. There's something called PharmGKB. And it's NIH, National Institute of Health. It's actually, it's funded. PharmGKB is funded by the NIH, and it provides information of how human genetic variation affects response to medication. This organization, it collects, curates, and disseminates knowledge about clinically actionable gene-gene associations. And then we have CPIC. And what CPIC does is they take information from various sources and they develop guidelines that are designed to help clinicians understand how to optimize patient therapy using genetic test results. So there's a lot of information out there, a lot of support, a lot of research, a lot of evidence. And on the next slide, I cut and paste a table from the CPIC guidelines. And this information is, let's say someone gets their pharmacogenomic test back. And based on this table tells someone how to dose a proton pump inhibitor, for example, Prilosec, Omeprazole, Prevacid, Protonix, Nexium. So this is just an example of one class of medication and to show you the guidelines and the type of evidence that is available on CPIC, on one of those, the guideline website. Okay. And just as an aside, there are some medications that are broken down by many different enzymes. So it's a very, very complex pathway. And CPIC covers what if someone has, they have genetic variations in a few different genes that affect one medication. So, with one gene would say this, one gene would say that. So CPIC really guides the clinician of how to make the ultimate decision of what medication or what dose is appropriate. Okay, and then other resources that are available in Canada, there's a Canadian Pharmacogenomics Network for Drug Safety. In Holland, there's the Dutch Pharmacogenetics Working Group, DPWG. And each organization, they may not come up with all the same conclusions. They may have guidelines on some medication and not others. So it's really important to get a wide view across a couple different sources. Okay, so what happens if if someone wants to get tested? So a sample, a kit is ordered to the patient's home or wherever they're living, and it looks like a Q-tip, and the patient would swab the inside of their mouth, the inside of their cheek for 30 seconds on each side, and then put it back in the envelope and mail it. And once the lab receives it, they usually generate the report about a week later. And the report shows clearly which meds are not compatible and which are, and which have, a caution associated with it. Like, you can take it, but just take a lower dose. Or, also the really good labs report in great detail and reference the guidelines. So, you can always go back and check. And as I said, if someone does have a pharmacogenomic test done, really important to take it to every doctor's office. A lot of them can be emailed. If someone goes to a hospital, definitely, let everyone know, that let all your healthcare providers know that you've had this test done. And even if you've done it once, you go back to the doctor, just remind them, I had my PGX test done. Another thing, if someone carries around like a list of their medications with them, which I, as a pharmacist, I highly recommend that it's updated and it's with someone who's on medication, it's with them at all times. I would put a note there, pharmacogenomic test done, and have that information. So in case someone, someone is admitted in emergency to a hospital and they say, where are your medications? Okay, I got my list. And then if they see that, they'll be like, okay, 1 minute, there's something here. There's lots of valuable information. Okay, so what does a pharmacist have to do with pharmacogenomics? So in some states, a pharmacist can order a pharmacogenomic test on their own. In all states, a patient can order for themselves. However, in Pennsylvania, a pharmacist can only order it in collaboration with a provider. So if someone would come to me and say, can you look at my meds? You know, I work with them and their provider, and I would reach out to their provider and through a collaborative practice, I would have that test ordered, sent to the patient. Once the results are back, we look at all the medications that a person is on, and we complete a medication regimen review, and we take into account the pharmacogenomic results. A clinical pharmacist, we optimize medication according to the person's individual needs and lifestyle choices. It's not just, oh, you take medications. Absolutely not. My personal thing is I want people to be on the fewest number of medications that they need to be that are appropriate for them. So I definitely look at it from a perspective of how can we minimize medications, and the ones that you're on are appropriate for you. Okay, so let's go back to our friend, Ms. AR. Okay, so when her results came back, I discussed the results with her healthcare proxy, and I also sent the report of the PGX, the lab results, as well as my recommendations. I sent it to all the physicians involved in her care. Okay, so these were her results. She was an ultra rapid metabolizer for cytochrome P for 52D6, and she was taking Paxil. So if you look up the CPIC guidelines, someone's on Paxil. For her status, for her genes, CPIC recommends using an alternative antidepressant. And she was also on venlafaxine. And CPIC says, if it's used, the dose should be 150% of the usual dose. Okay, so my initial recommendations for her was that Paxil should be tapered, should be stopped slowly. So taper Paxil to 10 milligrams at bedtime for 2 weeks and then stop it. Just by the way, as an aside, a lot of medications, we cannot stop cold turkey. They have to be stopped slowly so you don't get withdrawal symptoms. After the Paxil is stopped, then we're going to slowly cut back on the venlafaxine that she's on over 4 weeks. And then, being that she does have a diagnosis of depression, she needs something. So we're going to start Zoloft. We're going to start at 50 milligrams a day. It's compatible with her genes. And the doctor is going to monitor her and increase the dose once a week if necessary, to the desired effect, up to 200 milligrams. In other words, 50 milligrams may work for her, but let's see how her depression is doing. And when I write medication management as a pharmacist, we look at the whole person. We look at all of their medications, not just the ones in the pharmacogenomic report. Whether, you know, just because it's compatible doesn't mean they need to be on it. So she was on Flonase. Okay. So my recommendation was that it should be switched to as needed basis for 2 weeks. And then if she does have seasonal allergies, she should start it 2 weeks before the onset of allergy season and continue it daily for 4 weeks and then switch to as needed until this allergy season is over. That way she's not on it 365 days a year. Remember, every medication potentially has side effects. We want to minimize that. Okay. She was also on Pepcid. Okay. And so my recommendation was to taper it, the dose over a couple of weeks, and then the staff at the facility should monitor if she complains of any stomach upset, because at that point she was not. Okay, and then she was on an antipsychotic, right? So I suggested that the staff monitor her for is she having any hallucinations at the moment, and if not, again, they should taper slowly. They should take her off the antipsychotic, the Seroquel that she's on, especially if the hallucinations are not hurting her or anyone else, they're not causing harm, then let's lower the dose and eventually get her off of that. Okay. And then other medications she was that I suggested to attempt to taper once the depression is controlled, like let's do one thing at a time. So she was on valproic acid for behavioral disturbances. Okay. And I suggested to monitor for any changes in behavior once the valproic acid is stopped. But again, it's a very slow approach, but let's see what she really needs. And then she had just recently been to the neurologist and she had been on ginkgo as a supplement for dementia, but the neurologist said she doesn't have dementia. And it's possible that the ginkgo, the supplement, was causing her upset stomach as well as headaches. So if she doesn't have dementia and she doesn't need to be on it, let's stop the ginkgo and then see if those symptoms resolve. And then again, if those symptoms are resolved, she doesn't need treatment for that, then hey, we've cut out a lot of medications. Excuse me. Thank you. Okay, so some key takeaways from today is that pharmacogenomics, it changes lives, potentially starting with your own or a loved one. Pharmacists are uniquely situated to optimize medication use using PGX. It's one tool. Knowledge is power, and know what medications are right for you. One of my mottos is, you deserve to know. Okay, so become educated about your PGX results, about your genes and how they affect the way medications work in your body. You are welcome to go to my website. Feel free to reach out to me with any questions. And I wanna thank you all for having me today. Yes, we'll take questions from. Excuse me. Okay, does anyone have any questions? Yes.
How much does it cost?
Excellent question. I always get that question. Okay. Thank you. How much does the PGX lab cost? Okay, so Medicaid and Medicare will pay for the test. Sometimes they'll only pay for certain genes. And remember, there are some labs cover, 38 or 56 genes, and Medicaid and Medicare may only cover a few genes. So a person has to have certain conditions for Medicaid or Medicare to cover. However, Medicaid and Medicare will not cover a pharmacist to do the consult. And a person's physician may not be so familiar with how to interpret a lab result, the lab report. It's not just, the report is, there's a green column, a red column, and a yellow column. It's not just that simple. There are other medications that influence the whole medication, story, picture. There are other conditions, like a person, their kidneys may not be working so well, age, gender, a lot of things influence medications, how medications work in a body. Pharmacogenomics is just one piece. It's just one piece of the puzzle. So that's why I really strongly encourage someone who's PGX certified to be the one to analyze it. If someone pays out of pocket, it's a couple hundred dollars. When the test first came out, it was thousands and thousands and thousands. But now the price has come down out of pocket between $300 and $500. You can get a phenomenal, phenomenal test that's updated whenever new research comes out. So if someone's interested, feel free to reach out to me. Pharmacogenomics. If someone wants a lab, they can reach out to me. Happy to guide.
Regarding the testing and the doctor being able to understand it. So you're saying that most doctors at this point need to be assessed.
So it's the question is, does the doctor know about pharmacogenomics and do they know how to in, interpret the lab and how to translate it into actionable, you know, implementation. So I can't talk for, there are, thank God, millions of doctors who save people's lives every day. I can't talk for everyone. Possibly, you know, physicians who are educated many, many years ago may not be familiar with pharmacogenomics at all, or maybe have just heard of it. The newer doctors possibly are more familiar with it. I've heard that psychiatrists, mental health plays a lot of mental health medications are influenced by our genes. So slowly but surely, psychiatrists are ordering these tests. But again, not a lot of private insurances don't pay. So, you know, it's an out-of-pocket cost for some people that may not be feasible for them. So really it depends on the doctor. I can't speak for all doctors. Yeah. Yes.
I'm a little bit confused by the process. So say we have a family member and we think this is great and I would love for them to do it. Their doctor argument and say never heard of it. So how will this information that I now have help me in helping a family member acquire this?
Okay. Great question. So the question to repeat, let's keep an eye on that. Okay. So the question is, if a doctor is not familiar with a PGX labs, then how would someone go about getting this test? Okay. Sorry.
Please fill it out. This and make sure that we can read it, because this way you'll get the recording later. Okay, so if we don't have your information, we won't be able to send you the recording. And we always send that. Everybody who has sent out who has applied online will get that automatically. Please fill it out and very clearly with your email address, we'll be sending you the recording either today or tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Feel free to reach out to me. I'm licensed in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Delaware. I can help patients in all of those, in all those four states. Someone has a loved one in a different state, reach out to me and I will put them in touch with a pharmacist, a pharmacogenomic certified pharmacist who can help them in a different state. So basically, you would reach out to me on behalf of your or your loved one if they're able to. Reach out to me, set up a consult. We talk about their medications. We talk about what health concerns they have. And I will reach out to their doctor with their permission, of course. If they're not comfortable with me reaching out to their doctor, I can tell them and what to ask their doctor for. And then once the test is ordered, it will come to their home, or their place of living. And then they'll do it themselves, or someone will help them do the test. It will get sent back to the lab. And then the results will come to myself as well as the physician. The physician will have it to reference. And then once the results are ready, I will review it with them in light of whatever medication they're on and then make appropriate recommendations. Does that answer your question? Any other questions? Any other questions online?
Didn't see anything else that was, you know,
pressing.
If there are any other questions, everybody who has given us their information, that also, that means everybody who is Zooming in with us or just registered and isn't online with us, everybody will get the recording later as long as we have your information. And in addition to the recording, we will also be putting in Hannah's email address. So you'll have that to respond to her. So please make sure we have all that information. I want to thank Hannah so much for an outstanding presentation. I mean, here we are. We are, you know, we're now the future of medication, right? We're like on top of it.
This is the future of medicine.
Baruch Hashem. Good things. Yeah. Good, at least some good news that we're getting, right? So we thank her so much for taking her time. We thank Laura Marion Synagogue, Joan Betish, for the wonderful meal we had. I hope everybody online is enjoying the wonderful meal like we had here at Laura Marion Synagogue. So thank you everyone for joining us, and everybody have a great day. Be safe, be healthy, and we look forward. Next week, we have another Zoom program That will be just Zoom, not in person. And check your emails and you'll get all that information. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I think Joan wants to leave benching.